She reduces, reuses, and recycles. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. This show is sponsored by the Chapman Automotive Group. And I just want to remind everybody that they sell some of the cleanest burning cars on the planet. We thank them for their continued support and for everything they do to make a difference in our community and therefore for the planet. We have another incredible thought leader and hopefully game-changing guest to interview today. I'm thrilled to have him. His name is James Costa. He is the director and producer of a compelling and I feel at sometimes shocking documentary called Lunch Hour, and I mean shocking in the most positive of ways, wake you up kind of shocking. Lunch Hour explores the National School Lunch Program, childhood obesity, and our addiction as a country to unhealthy foods. It shows what parents, schools, authors, doctors, politicians, celebrities, and chefs are doing to solve this huge issue and help save the children of America. I can honestly state that I watched the documentary from beginning to end with lots of rewinds, and I highly recommend it. James, thank you for being with us and for making this very important documentary. Let the questions begin.
Okay. First of all, thank you so much for having me on the show. It's really just an honor to be speaking with you, and I'm looking forward to an exciting show and hope your guests will enjoy
they it will. All. They will learn. I love the tagline for our show about we don't tell you what to think, we just want you to. And certainly, you're going to give us lots to think about today and hopefully inspire a great many of us to action. I'm already in action talking to some of my friends who have children in school, so you inspired me. And I want to add my own comment that it's my sincere belief that this documentary should be required viewing for all parents prior to their child's admission to school. We make everybody get a driver's license. This should be a parent's license to send their kids to school so they know what's going on. So that's a great way to start the interview, don't you think?
That is the nicest thing anyone has ever said about my movie. So you will always have a special place in my heart.
And that is great. And when it wins another award, I hope Mrs. Green will be by your side. And James, yeah, I mean it. It was very upsetting and unsettling and yet inspirational to me. So I'm going to do my part to spread the word about getting it out there so that you have amazing success. So let's start with what was your inspiration for doing the documentary and a brief overview of the important message.
Okay, well, the reason why I did this movie was I'm the chairman of the board for the Hunt Point Alliance for Children in the South Bronx. It's one of the poorest communities in the country. And I was up there visiting, spending day with the kids and doing, you know, going to classrooms, speaking to teachers, and then it was time for lunch. So we all sort of went downstairs to the lunchroom. And I saw what they were having for lunch, and I just said to the lunchwoman, and this is absolute truth, I said, "You're joking, right?" And she says, "No, and actually, this is a good day." And I just stood there stunned, and I just watched as the kids lined up, took their meals, sat down. Some of them looked depressed. Some of them were just, you know, poking their fork with the food and, you know, not wanting to eat it. And I was like, what in God's name is going on here? This is like, how could I be so naive? I was ashamed of myself. Like, why didn't I know more of this information before? And is it this bad? Is it truly this bad? So then I sort of went in, started doing some research and realized, yes, it is. And, you know, what could I do about it? I had a small production company and I decided, let me see if I can pull together some people who would be interested in helping me with this film, and Lunch Hour is the result.
And you know what I think? This is, people will say this when they watch it, and they'll tell me, you had us from hello with those three little girls. I mean, it's like, who does not want to, you start the film interviewing these three little girls, and I hung on their every word. So brilliant production and direction. Let's talk about the crisis. It was very clearly articulated in the film that it's much more than one of just obesity. It's about poor health. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, what's happening is our whole country is sort of, we're sort of addicted to food. And people say, oh, you know, it's a big discussion now whether we can call it addiction or not call it addiction. So it's like, please, let's not talk about that. It's like, we're addicted. That's just, it's not really a discussion. We have obesity issues. We have health issues. The nation is in crisis. So a lot of times people don't want to touch this issue because then they have to look inward and look at themselves.
Right.
And saying, am I eating the best food? Am I feeding my children the best food? Because the society is such a fast society, and we, you know, everything is like easy. I don't have time. Quick. And then we don't stop and look like, what are we putting into our bodies? You know, you wouldn't just drive your car or whatever it is and just run into the gas station, put whatever gas is, and just drive off. You know, you'd take your time. It's like, I want to try to get the best gas I can to put in my car, if you can afford it, things like that.
So my car works right. Yes.
Yeah, so your car works right. You want to take care of it. You want to take care of your house. You want to take care of your phone. You don't drop your phone in the toilet every day. You take care of your phone. You take care of certain things. Why are we taking care of our bodies? Why is that like, I got to rush through that? I don't have time for that.
Right.
And again, everyone's busy. We're all trying to, you know, do our jobs, go to work, go to school, do all that. So it's not like, I'm not blaming people. All I'm asking people to do is just stop, count to three, and let's treat our bodies the way we should be treating them, and not also be destroying the earth in the process because we don't have time and all these kinds of things. Again, hopefully we'll talk about that later on in the conversation.
We will, and the film is not about blame, shame, and guilt. I think that's a really good point.
Not.
Absolutely
that's,
not.
That's why I did the movie. I didn't want to just point fingers and say, it's their fault, or it's that one's fault.
Right.
Because then you can just, oh, well, I don't have any power in that department, so I'm going to just go on to something else. This is too difficult for me to deal with. I'm not going to deal with it. So I wanted to make it something where everyone can get involved. It's about you. I mean, nobody wins in the end if you watch my movie and eat healthy but you. I gain nothing from this.
Right.
Maybe a little bit of money with the thing, but it's
hopefully.
Not like I didn't make this movie for money. I made it because I saw the kids, what's happening to them, and to me, it's just wrong. It's just wrong.
And one of the experts that there were so many that I decided to not name them all by name, but it's one of them said that 50% of children are reported as having fatty streaks in their arteries, which is that's a recipe for disaster, and it's an early sign of heart disease. I mean, 50%, mm-hmm. That's where I pushed rewind a couple of times. I'm like, what? So
yeah.
From where you sit and from the research that you did in making the film, who's safe? Is the crisis just impacting poor kids? Does it cross all socioeconomic lines? What did you find when you started digging in?
Well, you know, it's everywhere. There's nobody safe from this epidemic, truthfully. Because again, if you don't have a lot of money, you sort of have to eat what's available and what you can afford.
Right.
But if you're wealthy or middle class, then you can buy as much of the food as you want,
exactly.
Whether it's healthy or not healthy. So if you're not paying attention to what you're eating, all you're doing is eating more of the food. So if you think of an unhealthy food, if you don't have a lot of money, you only can buy a certain portion of it. But again, you can have 50, you know, fish fingers or whatever it is, unhealthy, you know, whatever you consider unhealthy or whatever, you know, a doctor would tell you this food you shouldn't be eating lots of. I don't want to start picking on foods now, but we can if you want.
Yeah, I'm really happy to. I call it the non-food. It's like we're eating this. And sometimes I eat it and I say, well, I'm eating something that has absolutely and positively zero nutritional value, and at least I know it, which it's a conscious choice. Mm-hmm. And another, what you wove into the film was not just about, you went to a deeper level, and I want to specifically talk about Rachel Ray, because you talked, mm-hmm. she talked about, you know, she's from the Food Network, and she goes deeper into the shift in our culture from really focusing on overall and success in school to our total focus now and almost, you know, obsession with academic success. Doesn't good nutrition have a major impact on children's ability to learn and succeed academically? It's so counterintuitive.
Absolutely.
Want them to be smart and succeed, but don't feed them well.
No, absolutely. And the schools kind of know this, because when it's testing days, they make sure the kids have a great breakfast. So that's the thing, is that they know. I mean, you can't be a teacher or anybody involved in this and not know that giving this food to children is not right. or it's not healthy. It's just a situation where it's their job, and they have to do it. And, you know, are they going to really fight this big tidal wave of doing it, of trying to change it, when it's such a gigantic thing to change on a national scale? A local scale, it's a little bit easier to do. So if you're just, if you're in the school lunchroom and, you know, you're just getting bashed all the time, you know, you, there's, you know, oh, it's the crazy lunch lady, it's the lunch lady's fault, all
right.
that kind of stuff.
Not
then
true.
You get defensive. You
right.
get defensive. And it's really not their fault. If you, when I interviewed some of the lunch ladies, they're like, we know it's not right, but we have, this is what they give us. They're like, heat this food up, give it to the kids. It's your job. Just go do it. Nobody's asking you for recipe advice or whatever. Just do it. And, of course, if you want to keep your job, you have to do it.
Right.
So they want, but they used to cook way back in the 70s and, you know, 80s. They were cooking food from scratch. And, you know, I mean, when I was a kid, I remember I was a lunch boy, they called me, and I'd go downstairs and work in the cafeteria with the lunch ladies and then bring the milk up to the classrooms and stuff like that. So I sort of remember this stuff. So I sort of saw the food, what it was like, and I remember them cooking it, and, you know, I mean, and it's so it's I say we should go back to that, and but also go back to cooking healthy food, not just go back to cooking food, but go back to cooking healthy food.
Because
that's
we know better.
To
I mean, we really,
yeah.
to know better is to
Absolutely.
Do better, and we do know better. Another shocking yeah. statistic to me, being, you know, I've been out of the loop for some time, and I was doing my research with the many moms I am in contact with. According to the School Nutrition Association, what is the national average of time kids actually get to eat lunch? That was shocking to me.
It's 10 minutes.
That's awful.
I know.
I mean, you're supposed to, like, sit down, you know, taste every bite. It's a stress-filled situation to eat non-food.
Yeah. And what does that say about what we think of our children?
Exactly.
I mean, I know that these school classes, schools are, you know, a lot of children, they have to feed lots of kids, and I get that. And, you know, so it's easy for us to sit here and say, oh, well, you know, have them have an hour lunch. You know, if there's no room and you can't cycle them in and out, and things like that. I mean, I understand that, but 10 minutes and having kids, sometimes kids eat at 10:30 in the morning. Who wants to have lunch at 10:30 in the morning?
And then still, you know, learn at 2 o'clock.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't
yeah.
happen. You know, that's
no.
what goes back to the compromise of you know, succeeding academically. It's not going to happen. So that's a segue to, you talked and mentioned the principal's dilemma, which I thought was eloquently woven throughout the film. It's avoiding the blame game. But the premise is parents trust schools to feed their kids.
Mm-hmm.
The food they're getting, in my opinion, is still pretty much not real food. But what mm-hmm. can principals really do? And from what did you learn, are many of them trying to do something because they care, or they wouldn't be a principal
yeah.
of a school? It's not like it's a high-paying, much sought-after
yeah.
job. It's tougher than it's ever been.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? Each school is different, and this is the thing. People always ask me, it's like, what's the best school to do? It's like everybody's doing what they can. And a lot of parents, like when I do screenings, I'll sit there, and a lot of the lunch people will come because they feel like they're going to be attacked and they want to defend themselves and things like this. So I just did a screening recently in Dallas, and we had some lunch people there and some parents there, and let's say it was an argument. It was sort of like the first time I had a real, you know, almost not a throwdown, but it was
wow.
an argument. Like, the lunch people were saying, we serve this and we serve that, and the movie, you know, is not what we're not like the movie, you know, we're different. And I said, I understand all schools are different from when I made the movie. There has been some change forward, but what the talk is now is to go back to where we were. And to me, to have made this movie a few years ago, edited it, done like that, and then want to go back to that, just to me is like, we haven't even given this thing less than 3 years and already you've given up on it. It's insanity. So anyway, the parent says, you're not telling the truth. I have the school menu here. It's unhealthy food. So what, you know, it depends. It's a slow process, but a lot of people are used to a certain way, and, you know, because if the kids don't buy the lunch, they don't get the reimbursement rate.
Exactly,
so
which I would love to go into at some point.
Yeah.
I really would. But, and the other thing is, like, for the school staff, How much control do they really have? I mean, from what I remember, there's 180 items that are approved, mm-hmm. and you have to follow that. So it's not like they can go to the farmer's market on Sunday and buy all the food for the week for the kids. So it's like there's a real disconnect in terms of where do we start taking action and responsibility?
Well, what I think people should do is you do have to hold them accountable. So the more people that yell and scream to them in a nice way, then they'll be forced. It'll be this like tidal wave of people going to their school principal. So if it happens in one school, then another school, then another school, then all these principals are going to have to go back to the USDA and say, we need higher quality food. Our parents are coming at us and they're not happy and we can't get, nobody's buying the school lunch and these type of things. Then they'll be forced to bring in healthier food. But a lot of parents also, you think that they all would want that, but a lot of parents are like, listen, stick with what you had before. My kids eat. I don't have to make lunch.
Right.
It's easier for them to, oh, absolutely. You'd be shocked.
Right. Give away their power. It's like, they're in school and I'm busy and that's not my job. I mean, there's part of me that's, it's understandable if you're a single mom working two jobs, the last thing in the world you want to think about is being an advocate in school, but it's so, so important because those people really do care.
Yeah.
So before we go to break, can you share, this is one of my infamous long questions, so I'll just go through it little by little, but I think it's important that you shared in the film, in the documentary, a history as to when things started to shift with school lunch programs. And you talked about, you know, I went to school in the, you know, late 50s in grammar school and early 60s, but really things started with the Great Depression. So can we talk a little bit about that, you know, the Agricultural Adjustment Act, and then talk about the role of the USDA?
Sure. Well, the USDA sort of decides sort of what goes in the school lunch, and then they sort of help promote the food industry.
Right.
So they're kind of doing, you know, like two jobs that maybe they shouldn't be doing. There should be maybe a nutrition office, office of nutrition that decides these are the foods that will only be allowed in the school classroom because it's the best for children. There's no way these things will cause them illness and unhealthiness. So that should be the guideline. But the problem is that when budgets are strangled, it's sort of the USDA is there, but sometimes not there with the best quality food. Because, again, it's a big problem. We have so many kids we have to feed. I mean, it's 31 million meals a day they have to feed.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, it's a huge,
it's a
huge
big number. Yes, yes.
So, and 100,000 schools participate in this program. So, you know, it's a gigantic feat, and you know, so it's not like we can just roll out, you know, healthy food tomorrow. It's a slow process, but we have to make a start, and we can never go back to where we were. We know what the result is. So we have to work with the USDA. We have to work with the governments to say, hey, listen, we need to change this. We understand it's a slow process, but please, it's so important. The longer we wait, another generation of children are going to be introduced to unhealthy food. Because that's another thing, too, is this is where children can be introduced to really unhealthy food and think this is the norm. Because school is for learning. And if we're teaching children this is acceptable food to eat all 5 days a week, then they're going to think that's what I should be eating every day, or I'm not sort of normal, or it's just unusual. And to have, you know, 5 days a week of just, you know, fish fingers and hamburgers and all those kinds of things all the time is just, of course, eating any one food all the time is not good, with the exception of certain foods,
you showed in the documentary over and over again, it's hamburgers, macaroni and cheese, chicken fingers, pizza. I mean, things that I admit as a kid I loved, and my mother and father controlled how much of it we had. Because my mother, you know, it was Ozzie and Harriet. My mother stayed home and cooked, and we had nutritional meals. And pizza was a big treat.
Oh, yeah.
Like
everyone,
it was, really, really big. And I don't think we can underscore enough the inherent conflict with the USDA. I mean, how do they help, you know, be advocates for the kids and still be responsible to Big Ag and lobbying and bulk purchasing and all that? It's a complex carbohydrate, as I like to call it. So we are going to have to take a quick break. I told you that time would fly. So when we come back,
I can't believe it's a break already.
It's just, I know, I can't. can't either.
Lord.
It's like I get the signal. I'm like, what? So when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about how the food we feed our kids measures up against the fast food industry, your take on the dairy industry, should kids even be eating dairy, and go into a little bit about the $2.70 per child. So everybody stay here with me. Great interview with James Costa, director and producer of Lunch Hour. Stay here with me, please. Think blue. Think beyond green. Think TDI clean diesel technology. One part of the Volkswagen Think Blue initiative, our goal of creating and encouraging eco-conscious products and behaviors. This is Mrs. Green. A car that can drive a long way should still make you want to, well, drive a long way. Volkswagen Jetta's TDI clean diesel is a high-mileage vehicle that lets you stop at the filling station less often so you can spend more time enjoying the road. See Chapman VW today for a very special offer on the 2014 Jetta TDI.
For almost 40 years, Bookman's Entertainment Exchange has been the place for used books, music, movies, and video games in Arizona. From the latest bestsellers to out-of-print classics, we have you covered with 3 Tucson locations. And now you can buy, sell, and trade musical instruments. Our newly expanded sections are chock-full of top-notch instruments. From beginners to seasoned musicians, we've got something for you. Open 7 days a week, shop, hang out, and enjoy our free Wi-Fi. Bookman's, good for your pocket, good for the planet.
Ready to clean out that garage? Goodwill offers you 40 convenient locations all over southern Arizona. And at every one, you'll be greeted by a uniformed Goodwill employee trained to assist you in unloading your items, prepared to offer you a receipt for your tax-deductible donation, and grateful for something you won't get anywhere else.
Thank you. Because of your donation, I have a job.
The gift of Goodwill. For a list of Goodwill donation sites, go to goodwillsouthernaz.org.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And we are certainly giving all of our audience, our listeners, lots to think about today. Somewhat disturbing, sometimes hopeful. Great information being shared by our guest today. He is James Costa, the director and producer of a compelling documentary called Lunch Hour. Lunch Hour explores the National School Lunch Program, childhood obesity, and our addiction as a nation to unhealthy foods. Two quick reminders, Mrs. Green's World membership program is alive and growing. We ask that you consider becoming an official supporter of Mrs. Green's World to help keep broadcasts like this free and independent. We're not lobbied or owned by anybody. It's easy to become a member by visiting our website at mrsgreensworld.com and click on the Preserve Our Planet icon. We so hope you'll do that. And remember that we have a great app. It's called Igloo Radio. And again, visit our homepage. It's free and you can listen to important podcasts like this when you're working out at the gym or preparing healthy food for your family. So, James, thank you for doing the film and for taking the time out of your life's work to be on the show today.
It's my pleasure.
Let's start with this segment with how do the food that we feed our kids in school measure up against the fast food industry? Is it better or worse or the same?
Well, when I made the film, it was sort of I would hate to say it, but I think a little bit worse than fast food. But again, it depends on the school district, so that's sort of a sweeping,
right?
You know, brush stroke, and I don't really want to go there.
Right. But, so it's mixed.
You know, it's a mix. It just depends what your school is actually buying. You know, because each school department has a certain amount of money, and they get to basically decide where and what they buy. So depending on your school is how I would judge it. So that's sort of an answer to that one without, you know, again, because again, when you start pointing fingers, everyone just gets defensive and nobody wants to talk about the issue.
I know, and that can be my job. It's like I can say, so the kids eat that for breakfast and lunch. And a lot of times, because of the reality of our life where fast food is cheap and easily accessible, there's a stop at the drive-through window on the way home. So it's a very complex societal issue we're challenging. If you don't mind, can we talk a little bit about the dairy industry? My 6 years of doing this, more and more science actually is being brought to the public's attention, supporting kids not drinking milk. There's a lot of lactose intolerance. There are scientific reports that I stand by that are not supported by the dairy industry, but milk is really not a source of calcium. Where do you weigh on this one based on your research for the film? Do you want to touch that one?
Okay, I'll touch it a little bit. I mean, I look at it as this, okay? And I mean, if you look at what milk is, it's the food the mother gives the child to grow and be healthy and strong.
Right.
But a cow. Okay, why are we drinking mother's milk from a cow?
Yes.
I mean, it's as simple as that. I don't. It's there for nutrition. It's there to give nutrients to the baby calf, and that's the one who should be drinking it, not humans. I don't understand it. I don't get it. I mean, I drank it, you know, most of my life until I looked and stopped and why am I drinking this? I don't understand why I'm drinking it. People want to drink it. Go ahead. I mean, I'm not the milk police. But, there's so many great alternatives right now in the market. I mean, it's soy, almond, rice, hemp, I mean, coconut.
So
I mean, there's so many
choices.
Great alternatives.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And, it's just the whole process of, people just think a cow is there all day long like a milk machine. It's like they have to impregnate the cow. They have to take the baby calf away from the cow. So the mother is sitting there, okay, with udders full of milk that we consume, and the baby is just sort of thrown, sometimes killed, sometimes used for veal. I mean, it isn't like we'll take some and the baby calf will take some and the baby calf will go to the mom and everybody will be happy. It's just not like that. I mean, maybe there's some farms that are like that, but most of the milk we probably drink in our country is not like that. And, if people have no problem with that, that's fine. I have a problem with it personally, but again, that's just me.
I have a big problem with it. And I had this guy on our show, Dr. John McDougall, and believe me, he is not shy or bashful in saying what you just said. He said, we're the only species that drinks milk from another species. And the whole reason why calves get big and strong and healthy in a very short amount of time is because of the cow's milk they're drinking. So I'm proud of you for that bold statement. It's we can handle the truth on this show. And it's like people shouldn't be drinking milk.
Yeah. I give this a little example too. It's sort of like if you wake up in the morning, like a lot of us have cereal in the morning for breakfast, okay?
Right.
So it's like, do you wake up in the morning, get out of bed and go like, I'm going to go to an udder, the cow's udder, and milk it for milk.
Right.
I mean, you wouldn't. I mean, it's like that's how insane it is.
It is insane.
So why are we doing it? It's just like stop. This is that when I said the 1, 2, 3 stop. This is the 1, 2, 3 stop. Like, wait a minute. Put on the brakes. Let's look at this. Let's be reasonable. Let's discuss.
And a lot of issues are coming out with children, with stomach issues. I mean, in my family, lactose intolerant, one of my daughters, two of my nieces. I mean, it's everywhere where they eliminate milk from their diet and all of a sudden they are healthier. I mean, that's just a little tiny, Mrs. Green's World research study.
Yeah.
Here's another one I'm going to put you on the spot, and I can have my opinion. I know. It's like, I'm sorry, James, but you have a lot of courage. You produce the movie Lunch Hour, so that's what you get to stand on. So from where you sit and what you learned, and I thought about, should I ask you this, can we trust the Surgeon General's office when it comes to advice on nutrition and what we should and should not be eating? I mean, are they free and clear and get to just say what they want, or are they part of the complex lobbying political machine as well?
I mean, it's just, to me, it's a sad fact. I mean, it's just, it's politics in action, and it's just, people, I think, go in there with goodness.
Yes.
And I think when they get in the system, they realize something, they pull this aside, and it's just like, that's really great. But this one needs to get elected. That one needs to get elected. This has to get done. We can't, take off this one. We have to do this. And then it people kind of sort of like, you sort of like give in eventually, and then you're just like, well, that's just the way it is, and I just have to deal with it. And it's just, it would be okay if we were, I don't know, something that's just not that super important, but it's children's health, and we're doing this. That's what makes me angry.
I know.
That's
our
makes
future.
Me angry. It's like picture
yes.
frame. You know, the picture frame society. Like, okay, right. Who cares that maybe it doesn't come off a little straight, a little bit crooked or something, but you want to mess with children's bodies in this way? It's just outrageous. It's just like, maybe you shouldn't be doing this job.
Yeah, and we
you
all should be outraged. Yeah, that's you know? A and great answer.
Just makes me so angry.
Really great answer. I know. It really got me up in arms when I was watching. I'm like, you know, we cannot trust the Surgeon General's office, and mm-hmm. it's not their fault. It's not the blame mm-hmm. game. It's the machine mm-hmm. that we have mm-hmm. to really work every day to start dismantling. So mm-hmm. let's talk a little bit about Washington will reimburse up to about $2.77 per child for school lunch. I mean, that sounds like such a good number, right? But it really isn't, because how much of it gets spent on food? It pays for trays in the cafeteria and on. So explain for us what that $2.77 does and how complicated it is to even make the draw on that.
Well, a little bit of good news, they bumped it up to $2.93 as an average. Okay?
To how much?
$2.93.
Oh, wow, a big raise.
Wow.
I got to change that in my write-ups.
But anyway.
Let's go crazy.
Yeah. yeah, so basically what a lot of people don't understand is that that includes the electricity, the check writing, the lights, the trays, the forks, washing the dishes, hiring the staff. So eventually you end up with probably a dollar for food, a little bit over a dollar sometimes. So, you know, you really can't buy a high-quality food for a dollar. So you sort of get what you can get through the USDA and other places that maybe will donate food. A lot of schools now, if they can, they're looking for outside resources to bring in food. One of the schools that I did in the show in the movie, I mean, their average was like $6.73, but they had it privately funded.
Right.
So, again, is that the road we're going to go down? Well, now we're going to start privatizing food in the school cafeterias. Maybe it's a good thing. Maybe it's a bad thing. I just also met people from Revolution Foods. I was at another conference, and they were there talking about it.
I so want to talk about them in some
okay,
detail.
Okay, well, I'll wait
then.
We won't.
No, but really, I mean, that's one of the big challenges as well. So mm-hmm. a dollar goes for food. I'm trying to think about what you can actually buy for a dollar if you go even to a grocery store. Mm-hmm. Certainly not one, where I live, not one mm-hmm. organic tomato. The organic farm-raised, you know, non-GMO, the healthy tomatoes, they're over a dollar a piece. So you couldn't even buy a tomato, let alone feed 31 million kids a day. Okay, it's like take a breath.
Just think of what you just said, and to say that this is okay for children. Whatever. So it's a dollar. Whatever. Who would say, what parent would say, oh, a dollar is great for kids. Who cares? I mean, a dollar for children.
Can you buy a candy bar for that? Not that you should be buying a candy bar, but it's like there's nothing of nutritional value. I don't think you can buy a bag of chips in a convenience store for a dollar. So it's pretty pathetic. And then that leads into school lunch programs. From the statistics in the movie, and the numbers probably grown, is a $12 billion business. It's big money. It's big ag. And I believe, and I hope this is not a naive belief, but there are certain safety standards that the suppliers have to meet. But do they have any standards that actually have to do with the nutritional value of the food, or is it just about how it's prepared, processed, and shipped?
Yeah, it's more of a numbers game. It just has to fit. It has to fit the numbers. Because they just have to do the reimbursement. So if they're like, it has to have this much salt and this much fat and this much this, and it's just a numbers game. And they just have to, like, figure it out. And then they're like, okay, well, this is great. We'll add a little dab more salt in this one, and then we'll throw it out there. And
right.
that's that. We've done our job, and we get reimbursed, and yay, team. It's just going to take extra effort and money and getting parents involved and getting the school involved to say, hey, listen, we need more money. We need to change this. And, of course, that's a lot of work, and everyone's already overstressed. So is that something they want to invest in? So then what happens is just kids are just like, it's machine, because they're cranking them in and cranking them out. because, you know, 10 minutes to eat, get them in, get them out, quick, get the trays out of here, get them in, get them out. You know, so again, after all that's done, you go through that exhausting day to be able to sit down and it's like, how can we change this? How can we make it better? You know, it's a lot to ask. It's a lot to ask of people, and, you know, it's a gigantic thing.
And yet, the compromise, and again, I just cannot really and truly impress upon people the great information and content that they will receive to, you know, to become activists if they watch the film. But some very impressive gentleman was quoted in there about how this leads to compromising our international security because of the obese kids that are being turned down for the military, and the people in the military that are by and large being put on weight reduction programs. I mean, the beat goes on. So it's not just about we're feeding our kids crap, excuse my crass use of the word, and then who's going to serve, especially at this time, sadly, in our life when we are actually looking for strong young men and women. Let's not go there because I could go to a really sad place about that. But we're talking about it can literally be said it compromises our national and international security. Is that, you agree with that?
Absolutely agree with that. I mean, you have to have, you know, to protect our country, we have to have soldiers that are healthy, and the government has guidelines of
right.
You know, you have to be a certain height, weight, all that kind of stuff to make sure that, you know, you're not putting yourself at risk and your soldiers at risk,
right.
And anyone else that, you know, and the communities that you're serving and nations that you're serving, because you can't, you know, be unfit and not be able to maybe run somewhere or do something. You have to be fit. So to just, again, close our eyes and just say, have another serving or whatever. It's not, don't tell me what to eat. You're the food police.
Right,
all that kind of stuff.
Your documentary points out it doesn't start when they're applying for getting admitted into the military. It starts in kindergarten with what they're getting for lunch. That's where we
Absolutely.
Start the really slippery slope. So I want to ask you this. I'm dying to ask you this.
Okay.
What do kids really want to eat? What did you find? The kids were adorable, and to me, I don't know how you captured them so authentically and by and large not feeling rehearsed. They were adorable. What do they like? Is it mostly bad?
You know what? It's a lot of the kids, depending on the age group, they were like, because I asked that question, and it was everybody wanted pizza. I'm like,
right.
What would you have for lunch if you could have anything? Pizza. Literally every child said pizza. Okay. So again, that's sort of something of, you know, you can make a healthy pizza, and you know, and but you don't eat it every day. You don't eat it every day. And, you know, so you have to just say, how do they get to that point? Why are kids the first food they say they want at school is pizza?
Yes.
Because, again, they're at school. School's tough. There's, you know, dealing with your classmates, you know, and teachers. Everybody's yelling at you, telling you, do this, do that, do
right,
this.
Right.
Again, food is the last thing that we get to sort of sometimes get to control. We can eat it or we don't have to eat it. We can buy it or we don't have to buy it. So we want that one thing in life to be pleasurable. You know, so again, we've been told our whole life, when you look at fast food commercials and food for junk food and stuff like that, eat this, you'll be happy. Okay? We don't see commercials with dancing carrots and dancing broccoli saying
we
eat
don't.
Me and the your sexy woman eating a bowl of, you know, healthy pasta or a bowl of healthy broccoli. It's them eating a hamburger or whatever the food item is. It's always in a sexy way, and they're always happy and dancing and singing and whatever it is. It's just they're never like,
so
eat this
true.
And you'll be unhappy.
It's a happy meal.
Yeah.
That's what they're called.
So you just,
happy meal.
Yeah, and it's that's what we're told as children. This denotes happiness. So when a parent then sees this menu at school that they're getting, they're like, well, that's happy food. My job is done.
Right.
Because all that food, it creates happiness. So my kid is going to be happy. I don't have to deal with this. I'm okay with it. Nobody's trying to kill my children because, again, they go to work and then they go to lunch. And what do? They go to probably the fast food or eat the unhealthy foods too, thinking, well, it's happiness because my boss just yelled at me. I'm going to go eat something that's just full of, you know, fat and sugar and salt and all this stuff. And then at the end, you're like, oh, my God, that was so good. And then an hour later, you sugar crash.
Comfort food. Yes.
Comfort food.
Yes.
And it's just like, but comfort food is supposed to comfort you, not kill you.
Right,
and
not kill you. That's a great quote.
That's the disconnect.
It is so, so true. Well, we are going to have to take another break, and proof positive that time flies when you're not only having fun, but learning. I know, it's unreal to me. So everybody, please stay here with me. We've got a lot more to cover with James Costa, the producer and director of Lunch Hour, the documentary about national school lunch programs. We're going to talk about discrimination and then end on a note of hope. Please stay here with me. We'll be right back.
Join us for a new Mrs. Green's World episode every Saturday at 12 noon Arizona time at MrsGreensWorld.com. All of our past shows are available as on-demand podcasts at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Mrs. Green's World is a proud member of the Dream Vision 7 and Glimmerglass Radio Networks. If you have questions about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. More Mrs. Green's World next.
Hi there, this is Mrs. Green with some pretty impressive news about the VW Jetta TDI. It's got a turbocharged clean diesel engine, it's 90% cleaner than previous diesel engines, it gets 609 miles on one tank of gas, more than the Prius. That's from Tucson, Arizona to San Diego and halfway back. And it's got an amazing 6-speed Tiptronic transmission. See Chapman VW today for a very special offer on the 2014 Jetta TDI or visit ChapmanTucson.com.
Shop the Habit Store first for your home improvement needs, appliances, and furnishings. We have daily specials, weekly red tag sales, and occasional store-wide clearance events. Join our loyalty program and keep up with the special offers through Facebook, Twitter, and our monthly newsletter. Your good deals means Habitat Tucson can build and renovate more homes for hardworking people. The Habit Store hours are Monday through Friday, 9 to 5, Saturday, 8 to 4, and you'll find us on Grant Road, just east of I-10 in Tucson, Arizona.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Mrs. Green's World Radio Network, where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. So much great information to think about today. Our guest is James Costa. He is the director and producer of the documentary Lunch Hour. Lunch Hour explores the national school lunch program, childhood obesity, and our addiction to unhealthy foods. It shows what schools, parents, authors, doctors, politicians, celebrities, and chefs are doing to help solve this issue and help save the children of America. It's a big problem, and there are some bold solutions out there. Again, James, thanks for being with us today and for your 5-star film for Mrs. Green's rating. Okay. Let's talk.
You're my publicist, by the way.
I think I'm just going to go on the road show with you. It really, you know, people that know me know I can't fake it. And when I am so emotionally and authentically excited about something, it clearly comes through. And I'm a great lover of children, my own, my grandchildren. You know, I'm the big grandma that hugs and loves them all. So anyway, let's talk about overweight kids. With so many more kids being overweight, what's your view on the impact of our kids in terms of discrimination, and should we be talking about that more? There's psychological implications, there's job readiness implications, self-esteem. What's your view on the impact because of this obesity crisis on this? That's a societal impact.
No, I mean, I think we should talk about it. I mean, I know there are some people who say, oh, you don't want to bring it up because you'll make kids feel bad. But, I mean,
they already feel
some
bad.
Of them already feel bad. And it's just like, you know, it's being overweight has got to stress your body. It stresses your body out, and it's got to stress you out, too. I mean, I'm not overweight, so I really, you know, I can't really say I've been there, so I know what it's like.
Right.
So I just want to make that totally clear. So it's just, but, you just see them, you know, struggle sometimes, and you're just like, you know, you don't want to go up and say, hey, you know, you're probably obese because you're eating junky food. Stop it.
Get off that line.
I mean, you can't do that.
Yes.
Yeah, you can't do that to
no,
people. People don't.
Can't.
They don't, you got to talk to them in a way that's just, you know, open and honest and say, hey, do this. Don't do it for me. Do it for yourself and make yourself, you know, feel better. And if you're happy at that weight and you choose to be happy, then that's fine. I'm not the food police. You know, the food police is already out there. And that, to me, the food police is telling you, eat junk, eat junk, eat junk, 24 hours a day.
Right.
That's the
right.
food police. It's not you, like people like you and I saying, eat healthy, eat healthy. No, it's 24-hour service of unhealthiness is happiness. Eat junk, you'll be happy, you'll be successful.
We are bombarded with it everywhere you look.
Yeah.
It's every form of media, print, you name it. Mm-hmm. It's like happy people are eating the wrong mm-hmm. thing, and if we mm-hmm. eat that, we'll be happy. And it doesn't ever show them obese or overweight.
No.
They're all thin and smiling, like you say, mm-hmm. no dancing carrots.
Yeah.
When you, some of the really incredible guests that you interviewed, one of them actually said that food is a form of substance abuse. Do you, is that pretty bold? Do you think it's accurate? I mean, it kind of got my attention, and it's an addictive, horrible, slippery slope.
Yeah, I mean, there are some people who say yes and some people who say no.
Right.
I mean, that whole sugar salt argument that's out there in the universe now, I think it's really important because I fall prey to it too. I mean, do you ever eat like a bag of potato chips or a small bag of chips and like want more salt afterwards and
love
eat
them.
A candy
yes.
bar and you sort of,
yep.
you like, now I want salt and then you eat the salt and then do the sugar and then you're like,
yes.
now I want a piece of chocolate. I mean, it's there. It's real because I go through that. And so that is kind of, to me, an addiction where I say, okay, here, eat this small portion of chips if you want it. And if you want to have a piece of chocolate or whatever, portion it. It's about portion control.
Right.
Like, I can eat this.
Right.
I don't need a whole bag of chips. Take a handful, put it in a bowl. That's a good way to do it, too.
For measure it. Tips, right.
Is measure it, put it in a bowl. And when you're done with the bowl, you're done. You don't go back and refill the bowl. And then, you know, okay, I had some chips or I had something, and then leave it at that. Don't go back to it. If you go back to it, then you're probably addicted to it.
Then the bag is empty.
Yeah. And so the bag is empty. Then it's like, I have a problem.
The bag is empty. Right, right.
I mean, we have no problem talking about, you know, alcoholism and things like that. And I think we are addicted to certain foods. And these food companies know it. They do studies on it. You know, there's studies where they have children, you know, when they're testing food products, they'll take these kids, put them in a room and say, do you like this color blue or that color blue?
Right, right. And I have to go back to your statement about pizza. Like, probably just this is totally like out of sequence for where I want to go with the next question. But if I were a kid, I would have said pizza. And back mm-hmm. then, it was probably a better nutritious choice because back mm-hmm. then the dough was, you know, probably healthy and the tomato sauce was good and the cheese was real. So mm-hmm. it's not so bad, but now it's so compromised. But anyway, that's a total sidebar, whirling dervish
yeah,
brain.
Totally
so
true.
Is it going to take an epidemic to wake us all up? And what would that look like? Is there an epidemic already and we just don't know it?
Oh, it's there. We have an epidemic. I mean, it's you know, 1/3 of children are obese. If that's not an epidemic, what is an epidemic in your mind? You know, it's a scary, scary situation. And I don't want to see any child have to take heart medicine at 9 years
at
old.
Nine
but
years
that's
old.
A reality.
Oh.
That's a reality. What's they're, you know, with children with type 2 diabetes, you know, and they're, what to do because it's such an epidemic, they're making the little testers, cute little sort of like, you know, iPodies, because it looks small and cute and different colors. And it's just like, instead of doing that, which I know we have to do now because they're already there,
right.
change their diet. Type 2 diabetes, a lot of them you can change with
yes.
diet.
Yes.
So let's work on that. Let's make them attractive so they don't feel stigmatized that they have to do it. I get that. But let's also say, hey, we can fix this so they don't have to have a lifetime of that. But again, think about it. This is the old conspiracy theory setting in here. Think of sort of certain companies that are profiting from all this. They've got customers for life. You've
exactly.
got a customer for life.
Exactly, yep.
And that to me is, it's good business sense, but seriously, you want to do this to children. And that's where I'm like, we need to put on the brakes, count to 1, 2, 3, and say, okay, what's wrong with this picture? Why are children taking type 2 diabetes medicine at this young age when we can actually fix this issue? why isn't this on everybody's mind?
And everybody wins. The taxpayer
wins.
The
exactly.
kids win. The country mm-hmm. wins. It's not like there's a downside to raising healthy children as a nation at every right. level. Smarter kids, mm-hmm. kids who actually mm-hmm. go to school. I mean, the beat goes on. I'm on my soapbox now, but let's go down the fantasy road for this, because
okay.
let's just say, you know, this show goes viral. Your movie is on every major radio, TV network, which, let's put it out there.
Okay.
Let's just say that that happened. And we mm-hmm. decided as a country to start serving even 50% of our kids healthy, mm-hmm. nutritious food starting in like January of 2015. Could we do it? What are the supply chain issues?
It's already, the train's already left the station on this with schools starting to do this, and a lot of schools are doing it. So
right.
the movie, you know, shows that, you know, it's not all bad, because I show in the movie,
yes.
not everybody's doing a bad job. So it's not like it's a Debbie Downer movie, the entire movie. And, you know, we have to applaud the schools. We have to encourage them. We have to say, don't give up. You wouldn't say to someone, you know, if we say that this is an addiction and we're giving food to kids that are addictive, you would never say to an alcoholic, oh, you stop after a week. I mean, it's a process that they go through, and
yes.
they fall off the wagon, they go back on the wagon. It's certain things. So we can't just say, well, we tried it for 3 days, the kids didn't like it, so we're going to give up and go back to it because we don't
right.
want the parents yelling at
right.
us, and the kids say they're hungry and all this. Well, you have to grow up and realize this is not going to happen overnight.
It's so true. It's a process.
It's a process.
It's a
and
process.
If you don't take it seriously, then shame on you is what I say. You shouldn't give up on this in 3 days or 4 days or a week or 3 months. It's going to take time. And Marion Nestle said it, and it was in the movie, but I ended up cutting it out, is she said to me, you know what? If they'll eat eventually. They're not gonna, they won't stop. They'll eventually say, all right, I'll eat this food.
That's so Marion. I mean, I interviewed
exactly.
her on the show
yeah.
quite a while ago, and like, there's
yep.
no nonsense Marion, for
yep.
sure. She's like, we should be ashamed of ourselves. You know, this mm-hmm. is a disgrace. But I don't mm-hmm. want anyone who's listening to get the idea that it is a Debbie Downer movie, because it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
It informs, yep. it provides solutions, it gives hope, it raises awareness. So I don't want that to go out there at all. I mean, there are shocking pieces of information in the movie that we need to be shocked into action for. So I want to certainly clarify that it is not a Debbie Downer movie. So
yeah.
let's talk about New York City. I'm a Jersey
okay.
girl, and
all right.
my
go
favorite
Jersey.
Place in the world to visit, and I am so not kidding, is New York City. I think the world watches what New York City does. I know in the food security and food insecurity, food scarcity conversation, people use New York as an example. They could last 3 days without the food, you know, being brought into the city. So are they helping to push the healthy food needle forward nationally? So many great things going on in that big apple. No pun intended.
Well, they feed them, you know, they're the largest school district. That's why I chose to do this on New
right.
York City. And I was thrilled that they were willing to take part in this. And, you know, there's a lot of great people working there, doing the best they can under the constraints that they're under. And, you know, he said to me during the filming is that, you know, there's a lot of principals have this sort of fund that they have where the parents that yell the loudest get it. So the schools that are yelling the loudest,
right.
he helps the most. Because if he's not hearing from them, he assumes everything's great.
It's all good. Yes.
And it's all good. So why is he going to be like, hey, by the way, to call up the school? Like, you think he has nothing better to do but call up each school and say, hey, is everybody happy with the food there? You know, is any complaints anybody making? And so he assumes, okay, no one's complaining, so it's done. So the schools that do make, you know, a stink or say, hey, can we get better foods, he works with. He does the best he can under the constraints that he's under. And then, again, if we have a tidal wave of this, he's going to be like, go up to his superiors and say, listen, I don't have the money or the tools to handle this. We need to take this up a notch in the government and get more money for this issue because the parents are complaining and the kids are, you know, look at the statistics. It's not pretty. We need to fix this as a nation. This is a major, important issue. Let's all get active and let's not, you know, criticize each other. Let's just make it happen. And again, that sounds Pollyanna-ish, but it shouldn't.
Hey, I'm like, let's hear it for Pollyanna. Let's hear it for Pollyanna as opposed to Debbie Downer. It's always going to get better tomorrow. I'm like, that is just a really great example. Yeah. So last September, I had like this magical week on the East Coast. And one of the programs I visited was Steve Ritz's The Green Bronx Machine. And he took us on a tour of schools that in the South Bronx that are absolutely and positively being revolutionized because they're growing food. They're growing it on rooftop gardens. They're growing it in school spaces. And it's really changing the fabric of the community. He took us on a tour of one of the strips in the South Bronx. And he said, it was my two daughters and I. And he said, find me a locally owned healthy restaurant on this strip. There isn't one.
Yeah.
There wasn't one. So it's that, but the hope was he took us to a bunch of schools where good things were happening. Perfect segue. How did you find out about the Rocket Ship School, not in New York City, and talk about a little Revolution Foods, another hopeful sign?
Yeah, I mean, when I did the movie, it showed 68,000 in less than 3 years. They're over a million.
Oh.
Over a million. It's fantastic. And, you know, what they do is they work with the guidelines, the food guidelines, and they do, again, this is that whole privatization question is, you know, because they compete against, there's other food companies out there that go to schools and say, we will do it through them instead of through school food. So, again, this is another whole issue of do people want to get in, to change the whole national school lunch program and privatize it.
And Revolution Foods is an example of that. Yeah.
A little bit of it, because they're great to work with. I've known them since they were 68,000. I just saw them a few months ago, and they're amazing. You know what? They truly believe it from the bottom of their heart. They really want to put the best possible food under the constraints that they're under. I mean, they would even like to take it to another level, but of course, they can't go out of business. They need the money too, so they have to give them the best they can with it, because they work in bulk now, so now they can go to these companies and say, listen, we're going to be serving these many children, and we want only healthy food, or it has to reach a healthier guideline than what this is. So will you work with us? And you get people who care about children, who want to do it, who want to make it better, and it gets done. And, you know, so it's
hope.
Truly hope. I mean,
it's really
absolutely
hope. Yes.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And you can't give up. It's a battle, but what is more important than making sure kids are healthy and happy? Like, what else is
there?
An
is nothing. I agree with you. It's take
crazy.
Care of our kids. Take care of our kids. Another thing that I thought was hopeful in the movie was, and I've seen this in many places throughout the country and read about it, that there really is a grassroots movement to eliminate junk food in schools and actually have junk-free school zones. Isn't that a great trend?
It's great. It's a great trend, and it's a great start. So let's say you're like, oh, this is too big an issue, James. Our school can't handle it. Then great. Try to get junk food out of schools. Try to get the teachers to not eat junk food too.
Go
like
eat a Snickers on break.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Because it's just teaching. Kids will mimic what their teachers are doing. So just say, no junk. Do not bring junk food to school. Like, so your parents don't pack your kids junk food, because we want to try to promote healthy foods. Like, give them, you know, fruits and vegetables and stuff like that. And expose them to that. Now, if they can't afford it, then the school should be offering it to them, and that way they have a good vision of what it means. And because when kids eat this, you know, the fruits and the vegetables, they love it. It's not like they don't love it. It's just that if they're used to a certain food, and then you introduce it, and if you don't introduce it in the proper way, they're going to be like, ugh, I don't want this.
Even a chocolate-covered banana with, you know, organic, fair trade, healthy chocolate. I mean, kids, who's going to say no to that? So we have 1 minute left, and I'm saying that almost crying. I just want to say that next Tuesday night, join us for our Down to Earth series. Kimber Lanning, an internationally recognized leader in the shop and buy local movement and executive director of Local First Arizona. And next Saturday, Dr. Philip Landergan, Dean for Global Health, Professor of Pediatrics at Mount Sinai Hospital, internationally recognized leader in public health and preventive medicine, known for his decades of work in protecting children against environmental issues and their threats to their health. So you get the final word, James. You're not failing us. What's your greatest hope for the impact of this film throughout the country?
That people get excited about it as you did. I mean, just to show you that knows that I did a great job, or that, you know, that it had impact. And that was my dream come true, is for people to watch the movie, get the movie, and have as much excitement as you have. So I am so honored that you said all the kind words. And
the movie's name is Lunch Hour. Just Google it. I say, everybody, just Google it and you'll find it. Buy it, watch it, have groups in your house. Just do something. Thanks, everybody. Make it a great green week. James Costa, you're one of my heroes. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.